This is Science Friday. I'm Ira Plato at the Oregon Museum of Science and Industry in Portland. Last week, electric car and rocket ship developer Elon Musk told the British paper The Independent, quote, "Maybe we'll make a flying car just for fun. The hard part is, how do you make a flying car that's super safe and quiet?" Well, if anyone can make a flying car, it's probably Musk. But while we wait for that day to come, there are plenty of other innovations afoot in how we get from A to B, and a lot of them are happening right here in Oregon. There's electric trolleys on the streets, aerial trams and cars, electric bikes, scooters, airplanes, even a one-wheeled electric motorcycle. It is Portland, after all. And you know what? Many of these vehicles are actually made nearby too, not overseas. They're made right nearby here in Oregon. Does Portland portend and predict the future of transportation? Can other cities take charge and adopt some of these ideas as their own? We won't be taking any calls this hour, so please feel free to join us at one of the microphones in the audience to ask your question. Just raise your hand if you have a question. And for more on what we're talking about this hour, go to sciencefriday.com, where you'll find links to our topic. Let me introduce my first guest. Jeff Allen is the executive director of Drive Oregon here in Portland. Welcome to Science Friday.
Oh, it's great to be here.
What makes Portland such a leader in electric vehicles? What is going on here?
Well, there's a lot of theories about that, but I think Portland has always been an innovator, has a long history of being creative about transportation options. You know, state of Oregon had the first gas tax in the country. Portland had the first real land use planning system, has been a leader in transit. We've got more bike commuters than any other city in the country. We have this annual tug of war with Minneapolis over that honor. But people here have a real strong sense of place, kind of a conservation ethic. They also are early adopters. They like strange new technology. You put those together, it puts us in a really good spot.
So if I want to take a trip, let's say, a road trip, there are a bunch of different chargers along the way, but they're all different kinds of chargers, right?
Well, there's a few different kinds, but the good news is they pretty much all work on your vehicle. It's not quite a VHS Betamax situation. Oh, there's a few people in this crowd who know what I'm talking about. That's good. That's good. As you mentioned, Elon Musk at Tesla has always got to do things his way, so he has a supercharger network for his cars. But most of the rest of them that are out there work on the Nissan Leaf and most of the electric cars.
But he said he would open up that charger to all the other electric car makers. Does that help?
I think it will. I think it absolutely will. One of the other things that Portland's a center of is open source. And it took me a few months not being a software guy to figure out that you could actually make a whole lot of money by giving things away. And I think that's kind of his strategy. He's trying to open source the charging standards, make that the standard, which will be good for the industry and good for Tesla.
So are there incentives in here in Oregon or Portland to make you, think about conservation and using these vehicles?
There are some, but actually it's kind of interesting. There is no state. California has a $2,500 rebate for electric vehicles. State of Georgia has a $5,000 rebate. I think West Virginia has $7,500. Oregon doesn't do that. But what we have done is make it really easy. We've invested a lot of money in building out this charging system. As you were saying, we have more of these fast charging stations than any place on Earth. We have about 80 of them in the little state of Oregon, which is more than the state of California. Not that we're competing or anything, but
of course not. Of course not. It was interesting because I was walking around town today, looking at all the car sharing cars that are out on the streets.
Yeah,
you seem to be innovative in that too. How does that work? Well, why are people so successful at that?
Yeah, absolutely. I think Portland's one of the only places on Earth that has, five different kinds of car sharing. We have, car-to-go cars, which are point-to-point. We have Zipcar. We were one of the first places to have that. We have Get Around, which is like Airbnb for cars.
How does that work?
You rent your own personal car.
Your own car?
Yep.
You say, I have an extra car lying around.
I have an extra car lying around. I'm going to put it out there. Anybody can sign up to rent it for whatever price per hour that you want to charge.
Well, and the Car2Go, how does that work?
Car2Go is point to point. So you just see a car sitting on the street, or you use your mobile app to find the nearest car. You can reserve it. You walk over, swipe a card on the windshield, hop in. They charge you by the minute, and when you're done driving it, you can park it anywhere in the city and swipe your card again and just leave it parked on the street.
Now, you brought an electric bike with you here today.
I did.
Right. Why ride an electric bike rather than a regular bike?
What we're testing these for is to see if they will help people who, you know, we have a good transit system, but sometimes you're a mile away from the stop or your job is a mile away from the stop. And the transit planners call that a first mile, last mile problem.
Right.
They're clever that way. And so what we're trying to test with some Kaiser Permanente employees is whether they will take these bikes and use them to get to the train, and then it folds up and they can take it on the train with them and ride the train to work, or vice versa. So we're doing a pilot project to see if that'll work to get people more on transit.
Wow. Is there something in the water here or something that, oh, you have all this freedom to experiment and the backing to do that?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, like I say, I think it's a bunch of things. One is there are a handful of places around the country that are real leaders in electric vehicles. But frankly, for a lot of those places, they see the electric vehicle as a way to continue to do things wrong. From my perspective, right? We have bad sprawling land use systems. We have no decent transit. Oh, but if everybody drives an electric car, none of that matters. That's not going to work. And what Oregon is doing that's a little different is we're looking at electrifying the system as part of that overall strategy of sustainable urban mobility. So it's not just an electric car. It's an electric car that you can use in a car sharing system, or it's an electric bike that you can ride to your electric transit vehicle.
Right.
So we're trying to create that diverse set of options for people.
You've said that a lot of this electric technology is homegrown. It's made here in Oregon.
Absolutely.
Like what? Give our national listeners an idea.
Well, we're going to meet one in a minute, so I won't give that away. But we make the only modern electric streetcars or trolleys in the U.S. are made here in Oregon by a company called Oregon Ironworks. We make some amazing electric motorcycles. A company called Brammo down in Southern Oregon makes extremely fast electric motorcycles. We make some electric bikes here because we like bikes a lot in Oregon. We make some heavier equipment like aircraft tugs and forklifts. Electric forklifts were basically invented in Oregon many years ago. And what we mostly make, which is not quite as much fun to talk about for most people, is the stuff inside, the software, electronics, embedded systems, motor controllers, the guts of these vehicles.
And how did this all get started here? Was there one thing that started it all?
Well, there's a couple of things. I mean, Oregon has a history of transportation equipment with forklifts. Daimler Trucks North America is based here, a lot of transportation heavy equipment. And then the other piece of it is electronics and software. We know a fair amount about software and electronics manufacturing in Oregon. And more of these vehicles, they're a lot less like, it used to be a car was a mechanical device, and then it was a mechanical device with a bunch of electronic systems. Now it's basically a computer that has some wheels on it.
Wow.
And
wow.
The more it looks like that, the more we have some expertise to bring in.
I'm Ira Flato talking with Jeff Allen, Executive Director of Drive Oregon. And I'd like to bring on another guest now, an innovator, tinkerer, an inventor. Wow, look at that. Yeah, it looks like something out of a comic book. Wow, one wheel. He's come up with a vehicle you'd never seen before. Wow, it's like a one-wheeled electric motorcycle out of something you would see in science fiction books. And the person who's going to show it off to us is Chris Hoffman. He is the founder and CEO of Rhino Motors in Beaverton, Oregon, just outside of Portland. Chris, that was some entrance. You know how to make an entrance.
Welcome
to Science Friday. Tell us about what we were just looking at. Describe for our radio audience.
That's a tough one to do without having a picture in front of you, but it's sort of like half of a motorcycle, and you saw it in half and sit on the handlebars. and throw the rest away. So
it's true.
Yeah.
It's got a big balloon-like tire on it.
That's right. It's got a huge fat tire. I think it's a 240. All the electronics and the drive system are inside the wheel, so it looks like a big wheel with a small frame on top, and nothing else is there. So it looks like magic when you watch it go by because it's so smooth and stable.
It's sort of like a giant unicycle, but with handlebars and a big tire.
Right.
And driven by, and you don't have to pedal it, right?
No, it's smooth, quiet, it's all electric. It recharges in about 6 hours. It goes 12 miles. It's 10, 12 miles an hour. It's in that personal mobility space, so on the sidewalk, in the bike lane, you can take it on the train. You can mingle with people at a festival. You're at eye level. You can put your feet down. You're seating on it, and you can stand up and drive around. It's an interesting product. It wasn't until I actually started riding it around myself that you discover what it really is.
And how did you get the idea for this?
I mean, it's literally my 13-year-old daughter and I going out to go fishing, and she goes, "Daddy, I saw this one-wheeled motorcycle in a video game. Could you actually build that?"
Oh, really? And you wanted to satisfy your daughter.
Right, so she draws me a sketch, and she sells it to me. Like, oh, all right. And then I'm an older inventor dude, so you know, we don't like get all excited. We actually go home and try to kill the idea as soon as possible. So you get on the internet and you try to find out what you're not going to be able to figure out, and I just kept finding stuff. I mean, it's amazing what you can buy that's already integrated, that's already sort of a component, and it's just a matter of stitching it all together.
But, of course, you had some real experience building mechanical devices, right? You worked in the auto industry for a number of years.
Yeah, 15 years in the auto industry as an engineer, and then 5 years in product development and core technology and Skunk Works, and so, I was a pretty good engineer.
So what would one of these cost you if you wanted to buy?
You know, right now it's the first year, so it's $5,300. Mm-hmm. And then it'll come down in price as we get our supply chain more efficient.
We have to take a break. When we come back, lots more on the future of transportation with Jeff Allen and Chris Hoffman. Stay with us. This is Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. We're talking this hour about electric vehicles and the future of urban transportation with my guest, Jeff Allen, Executive Director of Drive Oregon here in Portland. Chris Hoffman is founder and CEO of Rhino Motors here in Portland. How does this electric bike, your bike, the Rhino, how does this fit into an overall scheme of a city planner?
You know, I've got a pretty strong opinion on that, and I think Jeff hinted at it too, is that there's a lot of niche-y little places for these types of vehicles, and they all fill, you know, a full pie. But I think what cities are missing is looking at transportation infrastructure from a time standpoint. Like, how do we save time? And look at it, you know, from that way, is how to do a time study. How do we have less stops on the train so the train moves faster, and then use these short distance transportation devices to aggregate people to less train stops, so more people will use the train. How do we get the bikes on the train? Like Jeff's saying, we're experimenting with fold-up bikes. I think that's a big plus. There's a lot of thoughts around getting cars onto trains, because now smart cars is only 8 feet long. I can park it on a train sideways, which really kind of changes everything. I can pull into what looks like a parking lot to me, and it's trains. And I can move so many cars and just clear a downtown out using railroad trains and get all these electric cars out of the traffic jam.
Jeff, did you want to jump in on that?
Yeah, I think it's what we're going to see is a lot more options, both in terms of kinds of vehicles and technology, but also in the way that technology lets us use the vehicles. There's amazing advances in autonomous vehicle technology. Everyone's heard about the Google self-driving car, which sounds kind of, which is great, except most drivers think they're above average. But what you can do things like that with that, for example, to say, instead of having to use my app to find the car to go car, I use my app to call one, and it comes to me from wherever it's been parked, and it picks me up on the street corner, and it takes me where I need to go. Or, you know, with a lot of what you're seeing with Uber now, very disruptive technologies that just use the space more efficiently, use the vehicles that we have more efficiently.
Do you have to have the will of the city, the people living there, the politics of it, to be able to integrate these into a, you know, where everybody's got a vested interest in the infrastructure?
That's a great question. The software is actually a little bit disruptive on that level, too. There's a software application where you can rideshare, kind of. It's sort of, I could go rent a car, use a phone app, and people will sign up for me to drive them around, and they can watch me pull up in front of the coffee shop and watch the dot show up, and they go out and get in the car, and money's deducted from their credit card as the miles go by on these cars. So there's this background noise of how do I, you know, create my own little business.
Yeah, and I think there's things like that that will happen to cities whether they're ready or not.
Right.
But one of the things that makes us a great place to test these things is, it, you know, it's a big enough place to matter, but it's small enough that if we need the head of the transit system and the mayor and the governor's office and three or four other people to get in a room and make a decision, we can do that, and it takes a couple weeks.
In a bigger city, forget it. There's all these competing things that are
Yeah, coming. God forbid you should be in a large state to our south and have to get something like that done.
Oh, my gosh.
You're always comparing yourself to that statelet going unmentioned. Let's go up to the audience here. Yes.
Yes, I was curious. A lot of the advancement in electric vehicles is contingent on being able to have quick recharge and then long charges of batteries to be able to use this. What do you see as coming battery technology for some of these?
Hmm. Well, how long does it take you to charge your bike?
It's really 6 hours. I mean, the chemistry that we have today, it's just not going to change for a reasonable charging infrastructure. The battery technology to be able to take a quick charge is a lot more expensive. Right. So there's a penalty you pay. If I want quick charging on my car, it's a lot more expensive. If I can afford 6 hours, then that's great. I don't think the chemistry is going to change much more than 10 to 15%. The talk of it doubling, tripling, quadrupling, I'm not seeing it.
And your electric bike?
It's similar if you're empty. I mean, one of the things that's interesting is people ask, how long does it take your car to charge? And I always ask, how long does it take your phone to charge? And most people don't know, and there's a reason for that. It's the same thing with electric car. Generally, most people drive 20 or 30 miles a day.
Right.
Cars have a range typically of 60 to 80 miles, and so you plug it in when you get home at night, and it's ready to go in the morning, and you don't have to think about it. Mm-hmm. There are lots of people working on highly disruptive, and including some folks here in Oregon, highly disruptive battery technologies. I think Chris is right. What we're seeing is pretty solid incremental improvements. The other thing that's interesting, though, is part of it's the battery, but if you look at how much more battery life you have on your laptop now than you used to 5-10 years ago, part of that's the battery, but a ton of that is the software and the battery management system and the way we use the battery and the displays being more efficient. So there's a lot of room for improvement there, too.
If now that we heard Elon Musk said he was opening up his technology to anybody who wanted to use it. Let's say you could take his high-energy charging device and use it on your Rhino. Could you do that? How would that shorten your charging time?
Well, I think that would, I mean, 10 minutes and you'd be recharged on
10 minutes.
You know. But I think what really cities need to look at is things that everybody can use today. And if you go to any parking garage in a major city, there should be, you know, a bunch of gym lockers that I can put my e-bike battery into and lock it and charge it while I'm at work. You know, there's little teeny things that we can do to help people move around better and save time. And that might be, can we just put a baggage car on the local MAX train so I can put a ton of bikes on the MAX train besides just that one little hook that you hook the bike on? And a lot more people will start using long-haul transportation. Same thing with cars. If I've got an electric smart car and I can drive it on sideways onto a train, and the city can just help define the square box that that car is allowed to park on and provide the infrastructure for the railroad, now I can drive a 40-mile range, 45-mile-an-hour car to Seattle. So there's these little pieces that are missing. The other part of that, too, is if we can put more trains back on the train lines for car transportation, it lowers the cost of freight transportation from the rural areas and gets more semi-trucks off the road. So there's a whole way of looking at all of this that nobody's doing because they're all, to me, trying to save fossil fuels. But it has to save time, and it has to save real money, which is time.
But you seem, on the other hand, to be saying that the city planners are opening. The political system is open to talking about all
which is
things.
Awesome. And I'm just encouraging them to think a little bit more strategic and a little bit more bigger picture longer down the road, we're actually sitting in the sweet spot of this golden era of fossil fuels when fuel's cheap, and all the glaciers haven't melted yet. And now's the time to lay the groundwork for infrastructure that's going to help us 15, 50, 100 years from now.
Mm. Okay, let me go up here to the audience. Somebody has a question.
Yes, I'm listening to this conversation. I'm wondering from the perspective of transportation sustainability from city planning, how do you balance the needs and the excitement of something really fun like creating a network of electric car chargers across the state with the more mundane questions of equal access and things like getting transportation access to poor communities and communities of color? How do you, or do you see those as complementary or in competition, and how do you sort of think about that?
Well, I think you got to do it all, obviously. And in the short term, there's always a competition for money. The good news is that most of these things we're talking about are pretty relatively small investments. You know, Oregon has this amazing electric highway program, 80 fast chargers all over the state. You can drive from Washington to California, all the way down the coast, all the way over to Bend with these chargers. You know, that cost a few million dollars, maybe $5 million. I think last I heard, freeway was $1 million a mile. So you're not giving up a whole lot of roads to get
that.
That's
cheap, actually.
Yeah.
The freeway.
Yeah. And, you know, the thing about electric vehicles, they are expensive up front right now, but they're very, very cheap to operate. Especially, I mean, an electric car is the equivalent of $1 a gallon gasoline. You know, the average electric car driver spends $20 or $30 a month on electricity, and that's it. Yeah. Mm. So one of the things we're looking at now is, especially as you're getting some used electric vehicles on the market that are 2 or 3 years old, that are more affordable, is how can we use those in some of those kinds of communities, the lower income working communities, particularly in some of these sort of ride sharing applications as a way to help get people to work or get people to transit. Because a lot of times those are the same communities that have a hard time accessing transit and getting to work.
Mm-hmm. Let me give you the blank check question I give a lot of my guests. If you had a blank check and you could spend it in any amount, you could dream big dreams about how you would create an electric transportation system. How would that progress, and what would be the first thing you'd spend the big money on? Too many things. It's like Christmas time,
it is,
right?
It's like Christmas time here. Well, I think one of the more exciting new technology, I think the first thing is to get more of these vehicles on the road and more people into them. Because just talking about cars now, not about the bikes and the rest of it, one of the things you don't realize until you've driven an electric car is it's actually a lot of fun. You have instant torque once you start driving them. So once people drive these cars, they tend to really like them. They really want them. If we had more of them on the road, more of them being sold, they'd get cheaper. So, you know, there's a lot of debate about chicken and egg, and do we need more chargers or do we need more cars? I'm a chicken guy. I think pretty clearly we need more cars. But the other thing that's really exciting right now is wireless charging, which could be its own show. But the technology is there and is really quite ready to allow you to charge these vehicles
wirelessly,
either stationary while they're parked kind of over a pad or parked at a light, or even in motion. So you could put some strips into the bridges in Portland that we all drive over every day that would allow you to charge your car up every time you cross over a bridge. And that's the kind of thing that you could spend a few million dollars on that infrastructure. Wow. It could really be revolutionary.
What if you find the biggest traffic jam spot where everybody's sitting and you put the chargers right there while you're sitting in traffic?
Yeah, at stoplights. Yeah,
a bottleneck, you know, or at a stoplight.
Yeah, we need more traffic jams in Portland for that to work. But
I'm sorry. Would you like to follow up? And what would be your blank check question?
I want to key off the last question, which was, you know, how do we support minority and low income people in their rural areas, and how to get those people? Those are the people that have to live farthest out in the suburbs and have to commute farthest to the jobs that are available. So we have to get cars off the freeway. The other thing that's trending interestingly is people are getting more comfortable with having a profile online. and being more comfortable sharing their car. And if you take that into the future, if everybody somehow has to have a transportation profile and you start doing predicting algorithms, like I go to my job every single day the same route, and you should get aggregated into trends of all these people are taking right. this route, you could actually reroute buses. So buses don't go stop to stop anymore. They pick up a group of people in a parking lot and drop them off in another parking lot, and it's all real time and all flexible. And that can happen to really start taking cars off the freeway using a lot of software.
So if it learns your habits of how you're getting
That's right.
to work.
You should get a text message to say, go to the Fred Meyer parking lot at 6:30 and you will have a ride to work on the bus. No stops, direct line.
We're seeing that in a bunch of places now. Actually, in Oregon, planners have started to use the Strata, the bicycling software, where people map their rides and brag about how they climbed the hills and so forth, to plan the bike facilities. Because they can actually look at, we now have a really rich data set about where people are actually riding, and we can put the paths there. So it's right. a similar kind of idea.
Mm-hmm. In case you just joined us, we're here at the Oregon Museum of Science and Industry. I'm Ira Flato talking with Jeff Allen, Executive Director of Drive Oregon, and Chris Hoffman, Founder and CEO of Rhino Motors in Beaverton, Oregon. This is Science Friday from PRI, Public Radio International. So if they know on Friday that you have to be that you go to work on Monday at a certain place, they can have everything ready.
Yeah,
pick you up and
point to point.
There's no. I'm ready. Anybody sign up for that? Did you sign up for that?
Right? How hard would that be?
Yeah. Okay. Let's go to the audience here. Question right there. Yes. Yes, ma'am.
Hello. I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about the relationship between the move toward electric transportation and coal, and the larger impacts on the environment.
I was surprised it took that long to get that question.
Big issue.
Especially in Oregon. Well, the good news in Oregon is that our electricity grid is already pretty clean. We only have one coal-fired plant in the state, and it's being shut down.
Hydro here, right?
Yeah, which has its own issues. But one of the great things about electric vehicles, so two things. First of all, one of the first things I asked was, how much cleaner are they really, because the power comes from somewhere? And the answer is a lot cleaner. There's been a couple of good studies, Union of Concerned Scientists particularly, that suggest that anywhere in the country, an electric car is better for greenhouse gas emissions than a gas car, even in the dirtiest, most, 50-year-old coal-fired plants parts of the country. And in Oregon, it's more in the range of 60% or more reduction in greenhouse gases using an electric car with the current power grid. But the other thing that's cool about it is it's the only kind of car you can buy that gets cleaner as it gets older, because the power grid is getting cleaner. Those old coal-fired plants are being shut down, and now with the new EPA proposals, they're going to get even cleaner. So over time, the grid is getting cleaner, whereas your old gas-fired car just gets dirtier as the emission controls break down. So it's all part of the same strategy, I think, to move the transportation system off oil onto electricity and then make the electricity cleaner over time.
Interesting. Question over here in the audience.
Portland has a great environment for electric cars and for a bunch of different types of transportation. Well, but what has to change in the rest of the country for it to move out of Portland?
There you go.
That's a great question.
It's good that a young person's asking that question. Thinking ahead, yes.
Well, we're seeing pockets of it in different places already. Actually, it's interesting. One of the top market right now for the Nissan Leaf electric car is Atlanta. That was kind of my reaction. and it's partially because they offer a $5,000 rebate for the car. It's partially because they allow the electric cars to go into the HOV, the high occupancy vehicle carpool lanes. But I think it's also because people there are realizing it's a fun car to drive. It does what they need them to do, and they like them. So I think we'll see some of these things get picked up fairly quickly in other places.
Do people come here from out of town and look at and study your system?
Absolutely, absolutely. In fact, our office neighbors is a group called First Stop Portland that does nothing else but show foreign dignitaries and people from other cities around the city and show them how we're doing things.
Yeah, we're actually a launch city for electric vehicles now. Companies do a big product launch in Portland.
Really?
Yeah.
Terrific discussion. Thank you, gentlemen. We've run out of time. I'd like to thank Chris Hoffman, founder and CEO of Rhino Motors in Beaverton, Oregon, just outside of Portland. Jeff Allen, executive director of Drive Oregon here in Portland. Thank you both for taking time to be with us today. Coming up, we're going to talk about what happens when robots attack. Stay with us.